questions that's been on my mind is how the image of Americans will be affected by that, specifically in Europe. Because I remember the time when Barack Obama was elected, and that really, you know, like the Americans as people has, you know, become more popular, especially in certain parts of the world. Do you think, you know, now we will see a reverse reaction, a different reaction?
The image of America, it's a long-standing image of a friend and a partner. And this friendship and this partnership, it will last. We have seen changes in governments in the U.S. Throughout the past years. Governments have changed also in Europe. Different countries of Europe make for a whole set of governmental relationships or institutional relationships with the U.S. And that, you know, doesn't alter the nature of our friendship and partnership with the American people. Maybe it brings an opportunity for Europe to be more united in the face of this election, also show that we're able to play the role of a partner which is more united and will be more vocal on certain issues, that we can come together in a stronger way, and that we will have an institutional relationship which is stronger with the new administration. But the image and the long-lasting relationship between the two partners will remain.
I think there is always an interesting relationship American presidents have with global citizens, right? And we look at the immense popularity that Barack Obama enjoyed outside the U.S. And I think that's probably part of the question as well, is how is everybody looking at Donald Trump now?
People pay a lot of attention to the U.S. in Europe, more, I think, so than Americans pay attention to individual European countries. And that's because the U.S. is a big power, and people are aware that decisions that are made by the United States will have an effect, not just for Europe, but for the rest of the world. But I think we need to separate sort of the long-term image of the United States and sort of the fluctuation that we see whenever the administration is different. So I grew up in Greece, and I know a lot of people in Europe, and I feel that a lot of people in Europe, they understand that Americans do politics differently. So they all understand that. Right? They're very distinctive. It's a very distinctive kind of politics, right? They can't really describe what's different, but they know what's different.
And then, so then what do they think about this election then?
So that's part of that. So there is a certain weirdness. If you look at it from a European perspective, the whole campaigning and the style of the campaigning.
And how long it is.
Now it's been longer. It's becoming longer and longer, but generally the overall, sort of the how personal the campaigns are, because the campaigns revolve around candidates for president. Parties do play an important role, but not as important a role as in European elections, where parties are really traditionally much more important than the individual candidates. So there is this personal aspect that I think is very intriguing and fascinating for a European audience. But then, of course, there are going to be changes in the way they see particular candidates. So I think a lot of people in Europe right now are surprised. I think, like the experts we talked about in the beginning, a lot of people in many European countries, including not just the elites, but also the citizens, they thought that Hillary Clinton would probably win the election. So I suspect they're very surprised. But overall, I think people admire the democracy in the U.S., but they understand that it has its own sort of distinctive characteristics.
Do you think this election has changed that opinion?
I don't know yet. We'll have to wait. It depends on what President Trump does and how he, you know, what kind of policies he represents.
Do you think that, like, with Donald Trump and Brexit, do you think that this will, like, signal a more of a decline in the Anglo-American dominance of world politics?
I'm not sure there is an Anglo-American dominance of world politics. I understand it as there is a special relationship between the two countries, so that's whenever I hear diplomats from Washington, D.C., from the embassy of the United Kingdom talk about U.S.-UK relations, they talk about the special relationship. I don't know what is going to happen to it. My sense is that from the U.K. side, I anticipate that the U.K. will want stronger relations with the United States because it's cutting its ties, or the ties that it already has with the continent.
It's interesting. I was trying to find the email from the British government that they sent, because I wanted to count how many times the word special was used today in the release that was sent out between what the conversation that happened between Theresa May and Donald Trump. I felt like the word special was used even more than the normal amount of times Donald Trump uses special. So did you want to answer, Valerie?
Yeah, just a word about the relationship between the EU and the US. Indeed, I mean, you bring up the fact that the EU and its member states in their diversity have relations with the U.S. in a bilateral way as well, and that will necessarily continue. Yet, I think it's probably the time now for the EU to step up and increase its role in the bilateral relationship with the U.S., and will probably work to play a more unifying role in this respect.
I was hoping to talk about the Paris Agreement passed earlier this year. The UN deal passed with over 100 signatories and mm-hmm. got China, India, and the United States to sign on about putting down global emissions. Mm-hmm. President Trump has in the past talked about climate change being a so-called Chinese hoax. I wanted to know what your thoughts were on what effect leaving the deal would have on relations with EU members and perhaps on the deal itself.
That's a very good point. I mean, from an EU perspective, the three domains that we will watch closely going forward are definitely climate change, trade, and the international order or global security, and our partnership with the US, you know, on other matters that relate to security. And definitely climate change is one of the top priorities. We will continue to foster the implementation of this deal and to push for results to be achieved through this deal. And as far as the positions that have been taken during the campaign are concerned, we really have to see how this will play out. Again, this is an area where we are going to closely monitor what the developments are domestically and how this will play out in the political system. I think it's a bit early to draw conclusions right now, but this is definitely very important to us.
Since I'm not a diplomat, I don't feel like I need to answer diplomatically, and I think as far as I'm concerned, I don't expect anything to happen with the Paris Agreement under these circumstances. This is the Kyoto Protocol all over again as far as I'm concerned. The only thing that's different this time, I think, is China is on board, and that's what might tip the balance, might convince the Trump administration to ratify. So my understanding is this agreement has still not been voted on in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate. I don't see how a Republican majority is going to approve this agreement, the Paris Agreement. So I don't expect any movement on this unless, you know, China pulls some levers or there's some external reason for doing that.
One thing we haven't talked about is the upcoming elections that we're going to be seeing in Europe. And I think if we've learned anything from this conversation, it's that certainly as a member of the media, I'm not going to predict anything, and we're not going to think about polling. But I do wonder now that we have seen these two important results, what we think the implications are for as we think about, I think the Dutch vote is first and then Germany. Is that the correct order? I'm in the wrong order.
You have the first being the Dutch vote in March.
In March.
Then you have the upcoming French election starting end of April and finishing in May. And then the German election in September of next year.
Mm-hmm. That said, thoughts? Does anyone want to weigh in on where, obviously, those are three very specific, those are, again, if we think about all politics being local, those are all going to be, those are three completely different elections. But I wonder if we see any implications.
So I think there is a trend that I'm interested in seeing how true it is or how much it continues. I think one of the things that defines our political era is, you know, the rise of populist movements and populist parties. Whether they're on the left or on the right, because we've talked about right-wing populism a bit, but there is also left-wing populism. So for me, it's interesting that traditional politics or the political establishment is not doing very well, not just here in the United States, but also in European countries. So I'm aware of populist right-wing parties that have gained strength in Sweden, in Denmark, in Finland, in the Netherlands, definitely, in France. And so this is a trend. And what's interesting to me, and I want to see how much of that will happen, is they feed off each other. That's my sense anyway. So the Brexit vote happens first, so a populist movement wins. And that encourages a populist movement in the United States. And then that could potentially encourage a populist movement in France. Again, that's a theory. We'll have to see if that is actually going to happen. But I'm curious to see if that's actually happening and if there is some causal effect where, you know, Marine Le Pen, I could imagine 5 years ago, she could be dismissed as somebody who is not part of the establishment and she will never have a chance of governing. But now Donald Trump won and he was not part of the establishment. Brexit happened and nobody thought it was possible. So maybe a Marine Le Pen presidency in France is also possible. That's something I want to see, if that's a trend that continues, or if it's just, if there's isolated cases of anti-establishment movements.
It's interesting that you use it. Why do you use the term populist instead of nationalist?
I think of populist movements as movements that are responsive to certain citizen concerns, and you know, they kind of make promises that sound good to certain members of the electorate, but I'm not sure how realistic the implementation of those promises are. There are populist movements on the left and populist movements on the right. That's how I understand it. So nationalism can be part of a populist movement on the right, but not necessarily on the left. Mm.
Shamira, what do you think about implications if you, maybe even if you don't want to do political economic, I'm just curious.
I can see, especially Brexit first, U.S., an emboldening of populist movements, of the anti-establishment, especially when you're like, this wasn't possible, right? It's always an establishment candidate who wins. And we saw the opposite happen. I can see that being inspiring to some and emboldening. I think one big takeaway and one that I think is worth bearing in mind in the coming months is just how many moving parts there are in politics. And Trump is one person who said a lot of things on the campaign trail. And he's going to be taking a position in a government of hundreds. Yes, he'll be the president, the chief executive, but he has to work with the Congress. There's a big bureaucracy that he said very little about. There's always an election in the United States, right? We're, you know, we'll be looking at the midterms probably starting in the next few days. And so I think with all these moving parts, I think there's just so much uncertainty coming up and a lot to watch. I'd be wary of assuming anything at this point.
To me, the story of this election is a story of political communication. That's what, to me, it all comes down to. The old ways of communicating with the voters have changed. And if there's anything I've learned from the Trump campaign, is that you need to have really good people who can convey your message, you know, in a way that resonates with the voters. The use of Twitter, the use of online platforms for communication. To me, what's interesting is that the Clinton campaign had a very, very sophisticated organization with volunteers, people on the ground, a lot of money. The Clinton campaign was endorsed by most newspapers in the country, so they had all the traditional support any candidate could imagine. But Donald Trump's campaign was able to navigate these new media, reach out to the voters. The Trump campaign didn't need any of the traditional ways of political communication because they had new ones. And it was much cheaper to do that. So he did all that with a fraction of the funds that Hillary Clinton used. And so for me, what I expect to see in future elections is that candidates trying to imitate that strategy in the future.
Really, and not any different than what Barack Obama did with social media and fundraising 8 years ago, in a way. You think so? Oh, Valerie, you disagree.
Yeah, I think the tone of this campaign was really what changed the communication, the divisiveness of the debates, the language, etc. And this really resonated differently with people, and you talked about making it more personal. But the drawback is, I think, really that it has made it more divisive, and I'm wondering, you know, what impact this has on the way that people would think of their community. How do you reunite people after such a divisive campaign? I'm not sure, and that is to be seen. So I'm hoping that all this very high-powered rhetoric will calm down, and that you know, people will get to work on the issues that people are worried about, and work on the fears of people to try to better understand them and transform this into a very determined policy agenda to make these people feel better about the society we're living in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much to our guests. I want to thank Valerie Wuxell-Lexton with the EU delegation, Head of Economic and Financial Affairs, Kostas Kourtikakis, as I say that? I did not say that correct today. I did. Great. An associate professor of political science at the University of Illinois, and Shamira Gelbman, who is at Wabash College in Indiana. Both of you political science professors. Thank you very much. Thank you.